Did we find out something about one another? Even if you're friends, you usually find out something about one another that you don't even know. So, what this book calls us to be, though, is, yes, ourselves. But to kind of get out of ourselves, get out of our what we call our sacred I, to the sacred we. Now, these are my words. They're not in the book, I don't think. Okay? And so, we are called, because we're a book club, kind of, to be librarians of the revolution. Richard Rohr and Mike Morrill is calling us to be revolutionaries, and they say that. But it really comes from someone named Catherine. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. Okay. So, Michael Moore, the infamous Michael Moore, says, I got it. Okay. He says infamously in 2002, I really didn't realize who librarians were. This is a direct quote, and there's some words that aren't there. You know how Michael Moore talks. Okay. I really didn't realize what librarians were. You know, such a dangerous group. They are subversive. You think that they're just sitting there at their desk, and they're all quiet and everything, but they're like plotting a revolution. I wouldn't mess with them. I'm going to mess with you a little bit today. We need messing with. It's a messy world. And we need messing with. So hopefully I'll be able to stretch you. With full disclosure, I do want to say that some of my resources today are coming from different places than the book itself. I read different things. I'm all over the place. I'm a liberal arts graduate. Okay. The Divine Dance. Another influence today is Dancing with God, a trinity from the womanist perspective. Womanists are people of color who are theologians, are poets, a different perspective on the Trinity that is much more lively, much more centered in what the Buddhists so rightfully call life is suffering. The first tenet of Buddhism is life is suffering. We know that as Catholics too. Okay, it's before us all the time. When I was at UCLA, we had a Buddhist priest that had to come in and use our chapel. And there was about 20 of them circled in this chapel, and we had a nice crucifix up there. And he was talking, I was part of the meditation group, and he was talking on suffering, and he turned around and he says, "That's suffering." Okay, we're connected. Okay, and usually it's through our suffering that we're connected. Yeah. Another one, some of you may have read this a long time ago. I keep it right on my desk because I've always felt weird. Carol Gillian's In a Different Voice, Psychological Theory and Women's Development. I've always had to translate through all my educational years, especially higher education, into the body language that I knew worked for me. But I had to translate that literal language into something I understood. I do know that many women have to do that. I do know that. I do know that some men have to do that, too. I always thought it was an Irish thing. But I don't know. I just don't know. Which brings us to the alphabet versus the goddess. The conflict between word and image. Something happened pre-Jesus' time that turned, that had a radical change of the human mind. And that was learning the alphabet and learning how to read. He's not against literacy, but he's asking us to acknowledge that something happened to our brains. And last but not least, this has influenced me on many levels, addiction and grace, love and spirituality in the healing of addictions. Whether we want to admit it or not, we are living in an addictive society. That's where I'm coming from. And I think the world has become addicted to some values that need to change. And that is why we need the revolution. And that's why we're the good people that are going to lead it in our way. We'll all do it differently. So, don't mess with librarians. That's the one thing you can say you've received from this group today. This is another slide. These slides are from the cathedral, Trinity Cathedral in San Francisco. So next time you go out there, it's a whole painting of all the saints. It's beautiful, and we're all dancing together. And we're all from around the world, and we're women, and we're children, and we're dancing. And some of us are holding hands, some of us are doing it on our own. But it's this beautiful mural. So I really ask you to go see it if you can next time you're in San Francisco. This is a Celtic sign of the Trinity. And I'd like to just acknowledge that it's complicated. And this is ancient symbol of the Trinity. You do know that St. Patrick, when he came to Ireland and they were what, called pagans, that what he did on these very sacred, what do they call them? Cairn? The tall, yeah. The cairn. They had a lot of sacred symbols on it. And St. Patrick just added the cross. He didn't erase. He didn't take anything out of it. He just added the cross. Is that symbolic? Okay, today what I'd like to do, is chat briefly about the metaphor of the divine dance, and I have my dancing shoes on, in case some of you didn't notice it, my ballet slippers. Moving us into the experience of the divine dance, early this morning as the sacred eye. And after break, we'll move into the sacred we as we experience the paradigm shift. Rick, or Roar, Moral, and Catherine. Catherine is mentioned in the book, right at the beginning pages, as the impetus for writing this book. Richard Rohr found the book on a table in a library. And he was supposed to do something else on this retreat in Tucson, Arizona. He was just going to hang out and not read anything. Okay. But he was so captured by what Catherine was talking about that he acknowledges her, and he acknowledges her when Jerry and I were in Albuquerque, he acknowledges her and her book, but says, don't read it because it's too heady. Which I don't think, I mean, I haven't read her book, but I have to add her in here because I think that Richard Rohr and Mike Morrill probably stole some words and theories from her. Words and theories from her, from this book. Now, any of us who are women know how that feels. When there's, you know, board meetings, PTA meetings, meetings, work meetings, where someone steals an idea that we said 10 minutes ago and makes it their own, and the whole room agrees. Women speak in a different voice. Men have experienced it too, haven't you? What does that feel like? Like your chopped liver. Well, it's not going to happen anymore. Because women won't let it happen anymore. We'll speak up. As my mother used to say, we've had it. I've had it. You know what that means. Okay. So, Rohr, Morrill, and Catherine state the following. The Trinity is experienced as universal divine energy. It's experienced by all creation. Karen Baker Fletcher, in her womanist perspective, states that dancing with Trinity for the poor, for the disenfranchised, for the oppressed people, has always been a dance in a world of crucifixion. Read her book. It goes on from there. Richard Rohr, Morrill, and Catherine state, human beings become what we behold, and that energy becomes part of our individual bodies and our corporate bodies, meaning our organizations. In either case, the divine dance is experienced as divine energy, divine activity, but it's embodied within us, whether we know it or not, or acknowledge it or not. It's embodied. The divine dance becomes a metaphor for the relationship of the energy between three. Now, some of you may be Roman Catholic or may have been married in the sacrament of marriage. What makes it a sacrament is the energy of three. Because it's not just the husband and the wife, it is God within that relationship. That's what I was told. That's what I used to teach in campus ministry to the people preparing for marriage. That was the difference between it being a sacrament and just a marriage contract. That was the covenant, because there's energy between three. But, as Anne pointed out last week, I call Anne the Sister Wendy Beckett of Santa Barbara. Okay. There was a mirror in the bottom of, what was his name, Rubioff. She can say it much better than that. A mirror. That adds a fourth dimension. A fourth dimension of energy, not substance. Energy. Okay. We need to start taking this very seriously, because we're feeling it. Whether we think it or not doesn't matter. We're feeling it as a human race. I would say all creation is feeling it. The interesting thing, and something I learned as a Western person, trained in the Western way, but always having to translate, okay, is the Eastern Church starts with the number three and moves to the one. The Western Church historically moves to one and then moves to three. That's what we've been at this point, and I'm using the word victim, but it's what we have to unlearn in the Western world. It's too linear. It starts with the one, and it's too limiting on what that energy is all about. So there's a lot that we have to unlearn just by knowing that. Now, I love this part. In my part, they gave me the sign of the cross as being still, but still dancing. So those of you that are Catholic or of the Eastern faith, you know that Catholics in the Eastern faith do the sign of the cross different, right? Okay. Okay. Roman Catholics do it this way. Left shoulder. Okay. Eastern Catholics do it. I don't know why. Does anyone know why? I mean, it's a difference, though. And you could tell the difference if you go to Russia or you go to Eastern churches. You go, well, they're kind of Catholic. Okay. But this is what they say about the sign of the cross. And I find this interesting because I think it's been trivialized by athletics. We're allowed to bless ourselves. And in so doing so, it offers the individual a certain self-confidence and spiritual authority. Have you ever thought about it that way? Wow. We just... Okay. Self-signing can also be seen as renaming and reclaiming of the self that has a bigger identity. That's the athlete. And women athletes are doing it now. It's just not the football players. I think it was the women's soccer team, when they were winning. She did this. I thought, wow, it's catching on. Yeah. But it's a bigger identity than ourselves. It's not saying I'm Catholic, please let me win. Catherine, by the way, Gloria, was a theologian from Notre Dame. So we all know that all of this is very symbolic in the the goalpost. Yeah. Okay. Touchdown, Jesus. Yeah. Okay. Self-signing is also seen as shielding and honoring the body. Honoring the body. Women, at least as a little girl, I was told, wear your cross. It will protect you. Okay. And this is interesting. I haven't thought about it, but I should have. It represents the vertical and the horizontal. It all belongs, as Richard Rohr says. It all belongs. Now, I have a granddaughter. John, you're going to have to. Just 3 years old. We're teaching her the sign of the cross. It's complicated, right? Okay. Question. Peter? I should have known that. Thank you. Don't you just love serendipity? I just love... Okay. This is the feast of the...
Exaltation. Of the Holy Cross.
Of the Holy Cross. It's a day the Catholics put in the books.
For the sake of the recording, could we have the questions up here, too?
Okay. Oh, okay. So, want to move on to the sacred eye exercise? Any questions, concerns, comments?
When we do this, we cross the center point of our body, which involves both the left and the right brain working in concert with each other.
And important is chakras. If you're into yoga, and the divine dance, standing still. Anyone else? Those of you who don't have an idea of what the sign of the cross means, I'd like to hear from you. But Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Obviously, it's the mind, it's the heart, it's the work. We were taught some good things. We just didn't know it. Or we didn't grow up. If we chose not to grow up. But that's what it all means. Okay. Let's move into the sacred eye. You have pieces of paper and some pens at your table. You don't have to use those pens, so you can use your own. But on just one side of the paper, would you please write just like a title of it? The Sacred I. I. No, I as I. I am. Ego. Thank you. You will not share this. I don't want you to share this. This is a totally personal exercise. If you want to share it, you can choose to share it. It's something I do probably every 7 years. I shed my skin. I'm like a snake. And I shed my spiritual skin about every 7 years. And now that I'm getting older, it's every 10 years. And so I do it because I change. My concept of myself changes. So, on the right-hand column, there's going to be kind of two columns, but you don't have to, do that. On the left-hand column, write I am. And then, as quickly as possible, no thoughts, no judgments, write, and no thinking about what I think I should be. Okay. Write, I am, I am, I am, I am. Do it quick. If you get stuck after five, I'll help you. I'm going to give you some uncomfortable time with this. Be honest. Steph? If you're human, you get stuck around five. I want about 20. Just spend time thinking more broadly about yourself. Women get stuck in their roles. Look up if you're uncomfortable. It's okay to be uncomfortable. It really is okay to be uncomfortable. It's liminal space. Does everyone have more than 10? Mostly? Okay. Now I'd like you to take that entire list and with your heart look carefully at it and honestly at it. And then make a list in the other column of your top 10. Of your top 10. Your top 10 that you think I'm mostly like this. Most accurate, except that sounds judgmental. You know, this is who I really am. I'm not a wife and a mother. I'm more than that. But it's important. Spiritually in your being. You take the first list.
Yeah.
And you just put out your top 10. Not necessarily prioritizing. Like, this is really me. Okay. There is no one youer than you, according to Dr. Seuss. According to God, we're just not good in Genesis 1. Human beings just aren't good. We're very good. Sit with this. You'll have time to do all of this at home, too. I wanted to get you going. We'll talk a little bit about what you gained if you want to. And I'll be available to talk about it. Does that fit into your spiritual need? Today you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive that's youer than you. Dr. Seuss. Okay, we're about ready for a break. But before we do, I got to teach you a very sacred dance that we can do together. It's easy. I'll need you to stand up and to face one another. Pull out your chair a little bit. Face one another in a circle, in your small circle. We're going to do the sacred dance of the Hokey Pokey.
All right.
Founded in the 1950s by the band leader, what was his name?
Ray Anthony.
Ray Anthony. His introduction to this beautiful, sacred American dance was the bunny hop. I didn't know who did this until I looked it up, but I thought it was great, and it's time. Put your right hand in, put your right hand out, put your right hand in, and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. You put your left hand in, you put your left hand out, you put your left hand in, and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. You put your right foot in, you put your right foot out, you put your right foot in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. You put your left foot in, you put your left foot out, you put your left foot in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. You put your head in, your head out. You put your head in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. You put your tush in, you put your tush out, you put your tush in and you shake it all about. You do the hokey pokey and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. That's it, folks. Come back to the week. I'm here for questions.